Power comes from the Adirondack Foundation, offering grants to help local communities address urgent needs and implement enduring solutions related to the coronavirus crisis. Learn more at AdirondackFoundation.org. And from the Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, recently designated a comprehensive joint replacement center. Learn more at AdirondackHealth.org.
This is North Country Public Radio. It's 5 minutes past eight on this Tuesday, January 12th. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Since Friday, 1,500 more North Country residents have tested positive for COVID. More people are eligible for the vaccine, but rollout has been rocky. We'll try to get some questions answered in just a few minutes.
Governor Cuomo gave what he said would be the first of four State of the State speeches yesterday. He said what was usually a straightforward question about the state of New York was this year anything but because of the coronavirus.
We are hurt. We are frustrated. We are in mourning. We are anxious. We are shocked that an invisible enemy could wreak such death and destruction, especially in this, the wealthiest and most powerful nation on earth.
As Karen DeWitt reports, Cuomo's agenda focuses on emerging from the pandemic and reviving the economy.
Cuomo gave his speech from the War Room in the state capitol, an ornate lobby with murals memorializing New York's military battles. He says the number one priority in 2021 is fighting and defeating a disease that has sickened over a million New Yorkers and killed over 39,000.
The War Room is fitting because we are at war. A war that began early last year when we were ambushed by the COVID virus, and a war that continues today.
Cuomo says he will also focus on turning around what he says is a short-term economic crisis caused by pandemic-related shutdowns and planning for an economic resurgence. The governor says he's also focusing on getting the limited supply of vaccines out faster. So far, the rollout has been uneven. Registration for New Yorkers over the age of 75, who are included in the next group eligible for the vaccine, began at 8 a.m. Monday, but some providers listed on the state health department's website said they were not going to be giving out vaccines, and other links or phone numbers were dead ends. The governor says he's working with Cornell University and Northwell Health to form what he calls a new public health corps to help speed up vaccinations.
We will hire 1,000 health corps fellows who agree to serve for 1 year.
Cuomo blames the federal government for not getting enough vaccines to the state more quickly. The governor also continued his call for Washington to deliver a bailout package for states hard hit by the pandemic. Cuomo said he's been more hopeful that President-elect Joe Biden, once he's inaugurated, and the newly Democratic-led Congress will provide aid to help New York close its $15 billion deficit. The governor says if federal help doesn't come before the state budget is due in April, he'll have to take extraordinary and negative measures, including cutting school aid by 20% and making deep health cuts in the midst of a pandemic. And he continues to warn that proposals by many Democratic lawmakers to raise income taxes on the wealthy won't bring in enough to close the gap.
If we raise taxes to the highest income tax rate in the nation, on all income over $1 million, billionaires, multimillionaires, millionaires, any income over $1 million, we would only raise $1.5 billion.
Democratic Senate leader Andrea Stork-Cousins says she believes that given the state's growing income inequality and its impacts, it's necessary to change New York's tax structure. She also says the governor's estimate that $1.5 billion could be raised from the wealthy is too low, and that a more comprehensive restructuring of the state system could yield more revenue.
We're more than willing to look at taxing millionaires and billionaires because, again, we need to rebuild our economy. We can't just wait for Washington. I don't know what they're going to do.
Senate Republican Minority Leader Robert Ort says he found a lot to agree with in the Democratic governor's speech, including proposals to expand broadband to underserved areas. And he says he concurs with the governor's reluctance to impose new taxes on the wealthy.
This has the potential at a critical time for our economy. When you want people investing here, you want people coming to New York, you want these folks hiring folks, there's a potential this could have the reverse effect.
Cuomo announced earlier that he will propose legalizing the adult recreational use of marijuana in the state budget, an idea long supported by Democrats in the legislature. Ort is not ruling out Republican support of the proposal, but he and other GOP senators will need to see the details first. The governor is expected to deliver three more speeches this week, laying out more of his plans for the year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Yesterday, Governor Cuomo also returned to his call for policing reform in the aftermath of last summer's protests over systemic racism. This comes as every police department in New York is racing to submit a reform plan by April.
Does every 911 call require an armed police officer to respond? What role should mental health and domestic violence professionals play in public safety? What is the transparency and disciplinary policy? What is the use of force policy? But some elements are absolute. Mutual respect is absolute.
Governor Cuomo will discuss this more in future States of the States this week. But here in the North Country, legislators say they're still waiting for more detail on Governor Cuomo's proposed budget. Republican State Senator Dan Steck said he's concerned about how the governor plans to overcome a $16 billion state deficit.
There's a great tendency in New York State, given the nature of the politics in New York State, to see every solution as requiring increasing taxes. And I'm bracing for hearing more of that.
Cuomo said in his speech that the size of the state deficit dwarfs what can be raised in taxes, making the case that New York will need help from the federal government.
Democratic Assemblyman D. Billy Jones said he found the governor's address vague on specifics, which he said might have something to do with not knowing how much he can expect to receive from Washington.
It's still a wait-and-see game. I don't know how the governor is going to write that budget, if he's going to have placeholders in there anticipating federal help.
Given the size of the deficit, Jones says there's no way New York State can dig itself out of the hole without federal assistance.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:12. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, we'll listen back to a story from the life of Thomas Mitchell. He was born in 1913 and grew up in the Thousand Island Park, and he reflects on his experience harvesting ice. We'll hear more on that story coming up in just a few minutes here on the 8 o'clock hour.
Right now we're listening to music by David Archibald in Kingston, Ontario. Broadcast at the 8 o'clock hour is supported by Adirondack Land Trust, improving trails at Coon Mountain Preserve in Westport so more people can enjoy nature with less impact at AdirondackLandTrust.org, and by Guideboat Realty, located in Saranac Lake, where health, history, and the arts meet in the Adirondacks. Your guide to Adirondack real estate, GuideboatRealty.com.
Coronavirus infections continue to climb across the North Country. Since Friday, the region reported more than 1,500 new cases and at least 13 new deaths. Three of those people were in Clinton County, which has seen more than 220 new cases since last week. Herkimer County also reported three deaths in recent days, as well as more than 270 new infections.
St. Lawrence County reported a new death yesterday. The United Helpers Nursing Home in Canton has seen its death toll climb since the start of the year, with 10 total deaths and nearly all of its residents testing positive. In Akwesasne, the St. Regis Mohawk tribe is reporting a spike of 8 new infections with 12 cases currently active. More New Yorkers are now eligible to get vaccinated against COVID-19. They include everyone 75 and older, as well as teachers and grocery store clerks. But as Emily Russell reports, there's still confusion and frustration about the state's vaccine rollout.
Governor Andrew Cuomo said beating COVID and vaccinating New Yorkers are his top two priorities this year. During his State of the State address yesterday, Cuomo said he wants to get to herd immunity.
We must vaccinate 70 to 90% of our 20 million New Yorkers, and we must do it quickly, safely, and fairly.
To do that fairly, the state has prioritized vaccinating frontline workers like doctors and nurses, as well as people living in nursing homes. That first group included more than 2 million New Yorkers. The addition of everyone 75 and older, as well as teachers, corrections officers, and child care providers, adds 4 million more New Yorkers to the vaccine list. Cuomo said Monday, at the rate the federal government is distributing the vaccine, it'll take months to get through that list.
I understand millions of people want the vaccine today, but we must be patient, even though it is an impatient time.
Cuomo's call for patients didn't stop people from calling their pharmacists or doctors yesterday, wondering when it'd be their turn. State Senator Dan Stack, a Republican from Queensbury, says his parents tried yesterday to get a vaccine appointment.
They called around all over trying to get themselves vaccines lined up, and they were told April. You know, so this is an 83-year-old and a 77-year-old that can't get a vaccine until April.
Steck was critical of Cuomo's vaccine rollout, saying local health departments and hospitals should be getting more help from the governor's team.
He's got an army of people that are working for him, and he ought to focus on getting the vaccines rolled out.
Assemblyman Billy Jones, a Democrat from Plattsburgh, says he's also heard from constituents who are confused about where and when they can get vaccinated.
Regionally, we need to get on the same page of this, and get working on how we get this rolled out.
The state has an app, a website, and a hotline, all for people wondering when and where they can get vaccinated. The governor's office also announced it's opening 20 state-run vaccination sites in the next few weeks, including at SUNY Potsdam and the Plattsburgh Airport. Kinney's is also scheduling vaccinations, though they appear to have filled up fast. By Monday, the pharmacy chain had more than 7,000 appointments booked across the state. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio.
We'll put this story in a national context later this morning. Local legislators and mayors throughout the country have been speaking out about the bumpy vaccine rollout. On the takeaway between 11 and noon this morning, we'll hear more about what they say they need. And to start getting some of those questions answered, I checked in with the head of the Herkimer County Health Department here in the North Country, Christina Kane, and started off answering a basic question. How do I sign up for the vaccine?
Things are changing every single day, and I would almost say every minute of every day. So this is really tough because it's such a transitional period. But overall, the state really wants folks to go through the Am I Eligible link on the state DOH website. That kind of helps them to screen themselves for, am I appropriate to be vaccinated now? And if they are found to be eligible, the website actually will populate a bunch of contact information of the vaccine distributors in their area that they can register with. In a lot of cases, for instance, we are supposed to be getting vaccine, but we've had no firm confirmation yet. So if somebody in my area was to go on and use that Am I Eligible tool, Herkimer County Public Health's information would populate there, but it would just be a phone number because we don't actually have vaccine in hand yet. It might be in transit. We might be pushed back to next week. We don't really have any idea. So if a facility actually has vaccine, there really should be a link, and that link will take most folks to a system called CDMS. And that's really the centralized database that the state wants everybody to use to schedule appointments at their various vaccine clinics. So, you know, unfortunately, at this point, it's almost a you just have to really kind of be an investigator and try to look at as much information as you can, because there's no perfect centralized system yet, because all these facilities are coming online.
What have been some of those points of disconnect
we've heard of some hospitals having doses, but only getting through half of them, you know, and they got them 4 weeks ago, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, and that's very demoralizing to see, too. And again, it's not anybody's fault. It's just the way that this is rolling out. There have been a lot of confusing messages. You know, I don't think there was a really good feel for when can we move out of this priority group? Is it based on, is the volume of appointments slowing down for this particular group? Because there are some individuals who are opting not to get it at this point. There was still so much gray around those priority areas that it really caused a lot of confusion. And like initially, we kind of stalled around first responders. You know, some facilities were trying to adhere so closely to the letter of the law that if they didn't have those exact priority groups lined up, then yeah, some of that vaccine would be wasted, and that's not their fault. They're trying to do exactly what the state was emphasizing they wanted them to do.
Are other agencies in Herkimer County, are they distributing vaccines yet, or is it still sort of on hold for the whole county right now?
Nope, there are other agencies distributing vaccine. For instance, Little Falls Hospital was one of the first providers. I know that some local health departments did get some, others didn't. I think Rensselaer also didn't. And it had a lot to do with how many providers in the area were already vaccinating, what the population looks like. The state was really trying to do a pretty thorough job in order to kind of disseminate those doses that they're getting from the federal government, which are also few and far between. So it's just kind of everybody's in line, and we've all got our hands out, and they're doing their best to fill those orders.
Have you heard when you might start receiving vaccines then?
I'm really hoping maybe this week. My fingers are crossed. You can't see it, but I'm really hoping this week.
And once your county health department does start receiving vaccines, what's your plan for rollout?
Yep. So we thought about that quite a bit. And, you know, we have some very centrally located areas in our county, and we have some more rural areas in our county. And so what we're going to try and do is toggle between the two. So I think when we get vaccine, we are going to target maybe one of our more rural areas, and we've broken the county down into regions. So we broke it down into a north, south, east, west, and central region. And we have pod sites or points of dispersal sites located in each of those regions. And we will just start at one and rotate through as quickly as we can get our hands on vaccine and in time to be back at the first place for that second dose, and then just keep going round and round. And we will, you know, say we'll be up in Town of Webb, or we'll be down in West Winfield, and then we'll jump out to Little Falls, and then Frankfort, and then Herkimer, and then we'll just keep going around to our pod sites, you know, in those regions to make sure that people are at least having access to additional appointments other than what's already available at the hospitals, the urgent cares, and the pharmacies. So we're kind of trying to fulfill that safety net responsibility that health departments are charged with, making sure that, you know, for folks who can't travel, or, you know, as the weather gets bad, we'll try to come a little bit closer to you. So for those folks who don't have access to a computer, this is one of my biggest concerns, especially, again, because we live in a rural area. And even just for some of our older folks who might not have access to a computer or a smartphone, you know, if you've got somebody in your family or a friend who can check for you, because even if we could roll something out that would allow registration for those people, I worry that it would take too long and that the appointments would be gone in 2 seconds and we still wouldn't be able to connect them. So at this point, there's no real great fix for that either, unfortunately. But our eyes are on it, and we are trying to come up with different things to help those individuals as well.
Oh, so that sounds like that would be a big concern, is either folks who are older or maybe very poor that don't have access to a computer.
Absolutely. Or even folks who, you know, are just live in a place that they don't get internet at all, which I know is not something people think about very frequently, but it does happen.
A lot of the areas that don't are right here in the North Country.
Right.
What's been keeping you up at night?
Oh, gosh, so many things. Honestly, I'll answer that in two ways. On a personal level, that I'm going to miss something. The information is just coming so fast and so furious, and yet there are such gaping holes in it that I am just constantly rereading emails and downloading guidance and just making sure that we as a facility are not missing anything and that we are going to do our absolute best. But on a broader level, again, I guess really they're kind of the same thing, you know, just that communication. It is so frustrating to see that there is vaccine and that there are recipients, and it's just making those two things connect. And, you know, it's not anybody's fault. Everybody is doing over and above consistently and really trying to communicate. But it's a really large endeavor. And anytime you roll something like this out, there are going to be growing pains.
That was Christina Kane. She's the head of the Herkimer County Health Department.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, harvesting ice on the St. Lawrence River. After that, stick around for Bird Note. Why do most birds fly in flocks? Well, it's safety in numbers. We'll hear more on that just ahead at 8:30. Right now, it's 31 degrees in Ogdensburg, 33 degrees in Pulaski, 27 in Lake George, 25 in Long Lake, and 28 degrees in Westport. Chance of snow in the Adirondacks and along Lake Ontario today with highs in the upper 20s, mostly cloudy in the St. Lawrence Valley, sunny in the Champlain Valley, and overnight light snow across the region this evening with lows in the 20s expected. And of course, you can get the specifics on your community at the homepage of our website, ncpr.org. Well, Thomas Mitchell was born at Thousand Island Park in 1913 and spent all his life on the St. Lawrence River. Each winter, communities up and down the river plowed, cut, and stored ice to sell and use during the summer months. And Thomas's father filled the ice house, and Thomas did the same starting in the 1930s. In this North Country at Work story, he remembers the three-day ice harvest and how it changed as new technologies came along.
I was always on the four or five men that got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and got on the ice long before daylight. We had to saw that last 4 inches that wasn't sawed by the horse plow. You had these tongs, you grabbed these cakes of ice, and these cakes of ice weighed about 500 pounds. A little guy like me, hell, the cake would throw me around. You had to be a big, strapping, powerful man. Now, Chancey Patterson, I've seen him. He was really a strong, powerful man. I can see him today as putting the cakes around on the truck. And it's some hard, tough job. Now, as time moved on, they got new ideas about plowing this ice field. Drew Reed was the first one to come up with an invention of having a gasoline ice plow. He had an old saw that was an old buzz saw, and he hooked it onto a Ford motor. It had it on wheels. And this made plowing the field about one-third or one-quarter faster than it was by horse. And that was the last of the horse-drawn saws. And then they started then trucking the ice instead of coming with teams and sleds. Now, the trucks were fine and faster except for one thing. It was tougher on the four men that shoved the ice up because they had to shove it up about a foot or 18 inches higher than it would be on a sled. And this went on all day long, one of the toughest jobs you could think of on the park.
Thomas Mitchell spent all his life on the St. Lawrence River, and there he's recalling ice harvesting back in the 1930s for our North Country Work series. That footage, by the way, comes from his grandson, local historian Tom French, who has written numerous pieces about the Thousand Islands and created the online oral history website River Stories from his grandfather's recordings. It's 8:28. That's Bloomingdale guitarist Eric Pasternak with a little tune he calls The Waitress Had Big Hands, one of many regional musicians that we feature here on North Country Public Radio, and especially during the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks, Eric, for that music. It's 8:30. We're off to Bird Note in just a moment. A reminder that this hour's programming is supported by SECOM Credit Union, serving the financial needs of people throughout northern New York and Vermont, in person, online at secom.org, and on your smartphone.
This is Bird Note. Why do some birds gather in flocks? And why do some even join forces with other species? For pure elemental reasons, of course, to avoid predators and to find prey of their own. When birds fly in a flock, each individual bird is less likely to be captured by a predator, like a falcon. A single bird in a flock of 20 has only a 5% chance of being chased, whereas a bird alone is the only game in town. All that confusing movement makes it far more difficult for that falcon to concentrate on any one bird. And a flock of starlings, a murmuration, might even dive on a hawk, scaring it away. Imagine a whirling mass of thousands of birds headed right for you. With many birds together, there are more eyes looking in more directions, so birds spend more time feeding and less time looking around. And this is true across species as well. Some shorebirds that forage with their heads down, like godwits, will flock with birds that forage with their heads up, like curlews. Still other birds work together, like American white pelicans driving fish before them, or auklets that surround schools of herring and herd them like a border collie does sheep. See photos and videos of all this on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
It's 8:32. The 8 o'clock hour is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake, 800-941-5001. And Monica and I are going to look at a couple of events happening this week. You can always find things to do on our website. Check out the community calendar at ncpr.org. Dr. Tony Holtzman will discuss the nation's response to the COVID-19 pandemic in an online presentation free of charge to members of the historic Saranac Lake and those interested in joining historic Saranac Lake. It's happening at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the COVID-19 pandemic in the United States. There's more information on the historicsaranaclake.org, a link to that Zoom presentation this afternoon at 3.
And if you've been missing some classical music concerts, we've got something for you coming up this Saturday. Piano by Nature is presenting a free online concert by the powerhouse pianist Joel A. Martin. He'll be returning with an unusual program of a few original compositions, a little classical, and a lot of jazzical, they call it. So you can sign up to the email list at pianobynature.org to get more information.
And that'll do it for the show today. Thanks so much for listening.
Yes, that is the show for the day. Morning Edition comes up in just a minute. After that, it's the BBC News Hour between 9 and 10 o'clock. We'll get a global perspective on the Democrats' plan to impeach President Trump. That's between 9 and 10 o'clock this morning. Till tomorrow, be well.